Hello there, welcome to this week's official EFL podcast. It's a bumper pod coming your way with the irrepressible Josh Windass on Sheffield Wednesday's gloriously successful survival mission officially accomplished.
I don't think we ever felt we was in so much trouble, which could have been a bad thing because it obviously went to the last day, but I think we always had belief that we could stay up, but luckily we did.
Juliet Farrington gives us her thoughts on a dramatic championship final day, and we'll also reveal the king of our season-long 72 in 72 challenge. Please get following us in all the usual places or watch it right here on YouTube. Welcome to this week's official EFL podcast. So, Jules, playoffs underway in Leagues 1 and 2, the championship final day done. Did you enjoy that final Saturday carnage?
I think you had more carnage than I did at Portman Road compared to Ellen Road. We just had dark clouds and moodiness a little bit.
In all ways
and every single way. But yeah, and obviously managerial departures as well have happened since that moment too. So it just never stops, does it?
We'll come to that in due course. But of course, the chat on the final day, both ends of the table, and in what is the most important results and what happens when these games play a certain way, don't they? So let's get stuck into that because we have got a guest on. Our first guest today was part of a Sheffield Wednesday side that by the end of it made it look relatively straightforward. So Josh Windass, what was all the fuss about before you actually climbed out the bottom three and finished very strongly indeed?
Yeah, morning guys. I don't know. I think please the manager came in, obviously. I think we've been able to level on points with West Brom, so we're in really good form. And the manager kept saying to us in terms of the teams we were playing against, like, if you look at the table, or we're playing win miles better form, but obviously we're at the bottom of the league. So I don't think we ever felt we was in so much trouble, which could have been a bad thing, because it obviously went to the last day. But I think we always had belief that we could stay up, but luckily we did.
Can you ever think, Josh, of two end of seasons that you've experienced from one extreme to the other, but also for it to happen back to back as well?
Yeah, no, it's obviously, I have to say you wanted this to happen, but you never want to be played to a team that's bottom of the league, to be honest. But the fact that it does come down to the last day obviously gives you a little buzz, I guess. But it's obviously more scary knowing that you can get relegated rather than you can't get promoted, if that makes sense. So, yeah, it's obviously a big thing that we've scored on the last day of every season. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to next season now and wherever that may be. Hopefully we can get promoted wherever it is.
Talk us through the boss. We've heard so much about him. Broadly, it was seen as a man doing very, very good work. But as you were saying, that kind of sense of some great work being done, but the table wasn't lying, was it? It was no matter how well you did, you were still in the bottom three and then timed those wonderful wins to perfection at the end. What's it like as a manager? What's it like as a man?
Yeah, generally, I know a lot of players never come on and like spag the manager off and that, but he's he was genuinely unbelievable. The best coach.
For a minute, you were going to slack him up.
I was just waiting, but you know what?
he's having it.
He's genuinely the best coach I've ever had by far. As soon as he came in, obviously the first couple of games he came in, we actually lost. I don't know if that was just us getting used to his new way of playing and stuff, because we were playing quite well, but just not on the right of the results. And then things then, the detail in possession, out of possession, how he got the lads all to buy into it with his personality. And I think because not before that Cisco was not doing well, it's just that it didn't work out for whatever reason. And I think when you come in after a disappointment and you are as good as Danny is, then it's just a breath of fresh air. Obviously the lads buy into it. And yeah, he's incredible, to be honest. He's an incredible coach, and yeah, I've loved working with him.
What makes him so special, Josh? Because that's one hell of a statement to say that he's the best coach that you've worked for, considering you've been in football for quite some time and worked with a lot of people.
Yeah, it's just, I just love football, so I'm not really bothered about the, like, when people talk about man management and stuff, I don't have to, like, speak to my manager or, like, get told how good I am on a regular basis. I just like to know that the game plan's good and that I can play the best I can possibly play. And under this manager, I've never seen so much detail and clarity in the way we have to play and my role, especially what you have to do on a football pitch. It's down to the letter, and if you don't do it, he generally lets you know as well. So, he's the best I've had in terms of tactics and knowing what to do when it comes to a game day in terms of like closing the opposition down and stuff like that.
So it's really quite, I don't know whether refresh is the word because it sounds a little bit condescending, that sense of just getting on with your job, Josh, because You're probably, I mean, the age that you're at, you're at a slightly different stage to managers that I speak to, who speak to about younger players. And I mean this with the greatest respect to younger players, where there's a constant need for answers. There's a constant need for what's this, what's that, boss? Can you tell me this? And I presume you're probably straddling those two generations, I think, aren't you? Where you are brought up in a way of, here's your job, get on with your job, and I'll tell you otherwise whether I think it's good, bad or indifferent. But you're more than happy. And there's a confidence, I think, comes in that, isn't there? Where you go, I know what I can do, and I know what I'm capable of, and I'll just go and do that.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of, I'm with you, I can't really relate to the younger players as much anymore, because I feel like they need everything explained to them. But I believe in my own ability, so I believe when I've got a manager who's giving me a specific plan and exact thing to do, that I can go execute that myself anyway. So I don't need confidence from a manager to tell me I'm a good player or anything like that. I believe in that myself anyway. I think all players now need it. The game's moved on, and so many teams are coached well. And Brooks, you know what it's like as a player. You've been in many games where you don't believe in the game plan, and you feel like you could get beat. How often does that happen, though?
And you kind of collectively look around going,
yeah.
Are you sure about that? No, yeah. He's not sure about that.
But you just go and play and try to do the best you can,
yes,
anyway.
Correct.
Whereas under this manager, I feel like every game we go into, no matter who it's against, I feel like what he's told us to do is the right thing.
So what was that feeling like then at the start of the season when you were on that winless run and you weren't getting anywhere and you were at the bottom, adrift of that table?
Oh, it was horrific, honestly. I'm obviously a forward who's selfish and wants to score and create chances, and I don't think I had a shot for 12 games. So,
did the game plan not work then?
It wasn't even that. I just don't think the lads were taking on board what he was saying. And Cisco was honestly a brilliant guy. Like, all the lads got on with him really well. Just obviously in the games, we weren't even close to winning any games. It weren't even like we were being unlucky. We would stay well beaten, out possessed in every game. Yeah, it was draining, to be honest. So when Danny came in, obviously, like I said before, and you get these fresh ideas, I think he already had a head start anyway because of where we was. But obviously he came in and done what he's done as well.
I think it doesn't, I mean, it's been wonderful for us to watch Josh as neutrals, but when you look at Plymouth come up, Wednesday come up, and Ipswich do what they've done, it's that yardstick's not necessarily fair, is it? I mean, you would have seen a lot of Ipswich over the last couple of seasons. Can you put into words or give us a secret behind that success? Because I was saying to Jules before we started, you've got eight of that team that started on Saturday that got them promoted out of League One. Sometimes, and given your experience in football, things just click. Yes, you need tactics. Yes, you need technical players.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's that kind of bit of magic. Is that what they've had without it making it sound too mysterious?
I played with a couple of their players, and when I split, like, so I played with Sammy Mosey at Wigan, I passed him over with Dr. Sheffield.
It's been wonderful, hasn't it? Both of them, yeah.
And I speak to them, and I think the way I talk about Danny, they talk about Kieran.
Yeah.
So I think they've got a similar relationship over there. And I always say to them too, it's not like, you're not jealous of them, but the fact they've done what they've done this season and then Danny's coming. If we had Danny from the start, I always wonder if maybe we could have been doing similar things. Because last year he was nothing between the two teams. And obviously they've kicked on to a new level this season, and what they've done is probably one of the best achievements I've seen in the Championship in many a time. So, I'm really pleased for them, but at the same time a bit envious, because I feel like that could have been us if things were gone differently.
Yeah, but that could be you next season.
Yeah, well, in the Championship, you can never discount. In the Championship, you can never discount anything. I think Ipswich are now an example for many a team that you don't have to be a parachute payment team and a big paying team to get promoted. So, I think if Kieran McKenna wasn't in the division, I think that Danny would have a chance at Manager of the Year. But what Kieran McKenna's done at Ipswich and their players is phenomenal.
You mentioned the different pressures involved, and as Jules said, you've got two different ends to the season. I mean, the Peterborough playoff game at Hillsborough is one of the most amazing footballing experiences I've ever had.
And it's still talked about as well.
And it will be talked about for many a year. And then you look at how the playoff final finishes. I mean, nothing was done straightforwardly at all, was it? And then you talk about what this season's been. It's a strange thing to try and explain, isn't it, Josh? Because One's that kind of the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow in so many different senses that promotion is. And almost where you were with Wednesday for most of the season, it's that weirdly dread-like feeling that it's always in the back of your mind, isn't it? That you just want to get it sorted. You don't want to wish seasons away, but you kind of go, well, we know what we can do. Can we just box it off and get it sorted so we can move on from this? Because it is a different pressure completely, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot harder because as players, we care a lot. I never want to get relegated. Mm. But you see to people inside the club and the physios and the analysis people, and you know their job is generally at risk if we get relegated. Very much so. I think that brings a little bit of pressure to it because you speak to them and they want you to stay up, not because they want the club to do well, but they want a job at the end of the day. Mm. And that's obviously comes with pressure because you never want to be that have that responsibility of having people lost a job. So yeah, my main focus on getting staying up this year was the people around the club, to be honest, who obviously have worked with me when I've been injured or helped me when I've not been in good form and stuff like that. So yeah, and never want to get relegated for people like that because they deserve better. Because
just good people, aren't they?
Yeah, well, you know how it is. They give their life and soul every day to they'll come in on a day off to give you a massage, they'll show you, but they do everything to help you be the player you can be. So you never want to see people like that lose the jobs.
People talk about the Championship being the toughest league in the world and the most exciting league in the world as well. But when you look at what was needed this time to avoid relegation, it was an all-time high, the amount of points required just to stay up. How difficult was that Championship season for all the teams involved?
That's only because everyone took 6 points off Rotherham, that's why. usually I'm 43 or 42, but everyone beat them, so you're not 60. But yeah, no, it's probably been the best standard of Championship for a long time. When you look at the top four, nearly all of them are on 90 points. So yeah, that's incredible in itself. I think Leeds ended up on 91 or 90 and did get promoted. So I don't think that's happened in a long time. So yeah, the standard's been really good. As I said before about Danny, I think the level of coaching in general in the Championship has gone up tenfold, and then yeah, it's been a tough division in a lot of games because you can play against teams that you don't think are great sides, and you look at the players they've got, but they play really good football, and the managers have them playing good stuff.
Are you because your season's over, and obviously you were in the playoffs last season with Peterborough, and then going on to the final as well. Do you invest as much in the playoffs this time around when you're not involved?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love watching the playoffs. I wanted Barnsley to get a late goal last night to set it for extra time, but.
Yeah, to Rotherham, cheers for Barnsley.
No, I did. I wanted Barnsley to get another goal last night when I was watching it. The game was unbelievable. You just don't get games like that in any other normal scenario, do you? The playoffs just bring out a different side to it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the second leg of the Crawley game as well, and see if they can do anything about that trivial.
And like you said, though, it's a different vibe now because you can kind of relax. Well, from a playing point of view, but I mean, obviously, the season's finished, no more games. Discussions potentially for you. It's obviously a football club that you love dearly. You can really sense it with regards to how you talk about Wednesday, Josh. I'm not looking for any trade secrets or any exclusives. But it's what's the next protocol for you? Where would you like to see yourself at the start of next season?
At this point, I don't really know. I know the club are speaking to like my agent and stuff now about the next few years. But as I said, I'm going to go on holiday, and then I don't know what's happening with Danny and stuff yet. So,
Is he key to what you might want to do? Is he that important to you, that good a coach, that you there's a bit of you thinking, well, if he's here, get me on board? Is there a bit of that?
I think so, yeah. But obviously, I want to be at the club anyway because I've had such an affiliation and we've had such a good time basically over the last 3-4 years. But yeah, Danny's a big component of, I think, majority of the lads, to be honest, because of what we've done. I think you feel that next year we can go on to even bigger things. So, yeah, you know how it works. I just let my agent deal with this sort of stuff. And, I'll see where I end up.
Speaking of contract talks, you're about to sign your biggest contract ever, aren't you, in a few weeks with a certain lady friend?
Oh, yeah. Well,
lady friend.
I don't get married
to someone who's 60.
How old are you? Lady friend.
Josh is getting married very soon. That's where I was going with that joke. Are you all sorted? Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, we're all sorted.
Have you agreed with everything? Because that's basically what you've got to do, mate.
Yeah, I just need to turn up, basically. That's all I've got.
And it's across the pond as well, isn't it? It's not in Sheffield Town Hall. It's over in America.
Yeah, in America. So going to go over there with a few of my pals, and it should be a good couple of weeks.
Fantastic to hear, mate. Fantastic to hear. What you've seen from the Championship this season, given we've seen Leicester go, we've seen Ipswich go with them, we've got four big clubs in the playoffs. Do you have any inkling? Would you have any suggestions of who you think might be the third club to get promoted?
Yeah, I think the winner of last night's tie will go up. Bolton, I think Bolton will go up. And I still think Doncaster and Leeds will win the playoffs.
Okie dokie, very Yorkshire heavy. What's your thoughts on that, Jules, it being very Yorkshire heavy?
Very Yorkshire heady. I just think that Southampton, they made that tactical switch, and I just think that Leeds and Southampton could well meet in the final. I know that Russell Martin was changing things around for that last game of the season. And Leeds need players back. Hopefully, if you're a Leeds fan, you'll get those players back as well that were absent. I just think all the pressure is on Leeds.
Yeah. What I will say is, though, with Leeds not making the top two, I do think there's a mental effect of that. Years ago when I was at Accrington, we lost out in all difference to automatic promotion. And like looking back now I'm a bit older. The manager of the change room was like, oh, we've got to go through the playoffs now. And like, I don't know if Leeds will be doing that, but that mentality, obviously looking back, was you was thinking, oh, this is a nightmare, that with the playoffs, for reality, you've still got a chance to go up. And we obviously got knocked straight out in the semi-finals. And yeah, Leeds kind of need to dust that down and get it behind them now and try to focus on the playoffs, because I think Norwich and West Brom are more buzzing during the playoffs because they're what I'm trying to say. So
Southampton knew they were in the playoffs as well. It was just Leeds who were maybe just relying on that last day.
Yeah, and it can mentally have an effect on the team.
Josh, top stuff, mate. Really enjoyed your company. Apologies for calling your fiance a lady friend. That sounds more eggy the more I think around it. Look at Jules' face. She's so embarrassed for me.
Hello. Oh.
No, she won't watch this anyway.
She won't watch this anyway. My word. Yes, Josh, you've been wonderful, mate. Thank you so much. All the best with contract chats and where you end up. And, of course, wonderful, many, many happy years of marriage, my friend. You've been a star on here.
Cheers, thank you.
Brilliant stuff, Josh. Good luck. Enjoy yourself.
Thanks, Jules. Thanks.
Jules, we're going to pump the brakes just for a second because I've got a surprise for you coming up next. We're going to meet the king of the 72 in 72. Okie dokie, Jules. This middle portion of the pod is for a bona fide winner. Right, 72 in 72 has been going all season long. You caught me on the hop last week and it is so hard once you actually get stuck into it as your brain goes blank. There's been some real highlights this year, not least Stephen Fletcher just saying, I don't know, saying that more than actual names of teams. However, this is our final table. 28 people have stepped forward. At the bottom, Aaron Ramsey, the aforementioned Stephen Fletcher, Ruben Colwell, Stuart Dallas, Gary Rower, Alfie May, Valerian Ishmael, Andrew Moran, Matt Bloomfield, Liam Rossini, Lucas Djukovic, Joe Bryan, Mark Albrighton, Matt Butcher, Sam Byram, Callum O'Dowda, John Coleman, Joby McAnuff, David Artell, Tom Bradshaw, Ebo Adams, Wayne Rooney, Pete Wild, Danny Cowley, Patrick Bamford, Richie Wellens in third, some fella called David Prutton in second, but at the top, leading the way, well, pretty much all season from what I can remember, is Salford's Matt Smith, and he joins us right now. Matt, congratulations. How happy are you for this?
Honestly, delighted. It's better than my 25 goals this season, for sure. Best thing that's happened to me. Absolutely over the moon.
And the wonderful thing is, of course, we've made sure that you feel special, that you get the reward you deserve, and we've given you a certificate, haven't we?
This will be framed and hung in the Smith household, absolutely.
That actually looks like a proper certificate. There's some work gone into that.
That deserves a place in the toilet, at least.
No expense spared here on the official EFL podcast. Matt, congratulations. I think there was a couple of names in that list that you were more than happy to have beaten, you were telling us.
Yeah, perhaps it was an honour to pip you at the post, but I said if I didn't beat Sam Byram, then I would have just retired from any quizzes going forward. But no, it's a good list of names, to be fair.
Sam Byram was well beaten. You'll be glad.
Yeah, not just beaten, he was trounced by your good self, Matt.
Not just by you, Matt, but by Prutz as well.
Yeah, he'll be devastated about, won't he?
looking at the list of names on that list, I think I had an unfair advantage just from the number of teams I've played for and leagues I've played in. I think, the 72 teams, I've definitely played at a lot of those grounds. So I probably had a little bit of an unfair advantage against maybe Wayne Rooney or someone like that. Do you know what I mean? But
well, I suppose experience is the key thing, Matt. And we talked to you at a very pertinent stage of the season. Obviously, you've another one boxed off for you. Congratulations once again. And the places you've been playing football, both from a league point of view and geographically, there's so much under your belt. You've peaked. You've got to this stage of your career, and it's at the stage where you can't miss. What's how's this season been, and how proud are you of that fact?
Yeah, no, lots to be proud about. I think ultimately, from a collective perspective, disappointed. I think we kind of obviously finished last season in such a strong place, and we thought we'd have the season that probably Stockport have had. You know, we felt really good going into the summer, and then it's just been a real injury-ravaged 6 months, which has just killed us, killed any sort of momentum going forward. We went into Christmas in a terrible place, really. And then definitely had a bit of a revival under the new manager, who's been great. Mm-hmm. Loved working with him. And we managed to get some players back. But then, yeah, it's just been too patchy from a squad perspective. No real consistency. And I think that's really killed us. So, yeah, disappointing. I think, obviously, personally, individually, delighted in terms of the return and kind of what that's brought. But listen, I came to Salford 2.5 years ago to try and get promoted. So obviously from that perspective, it's been a bit of a disappointment. I couldn't really succeed in that vein, but yeah, so real kind of bittersweet really in a number of ways.
But the fact that only two other players have scored more league goals from you or more league goals than you in this campaign, that just sums up the effort that you yourself, from an individual point of view, have put into trying to achieve what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, I have to be very grateful to my teammates. And, you know, I'll tell you, I'm sure Prutz has played with big target men over his career. The target men are really only as good as the supply line that they're given. You know, if I've not got good delivery in the box from set pieces or in open play, I can look a bit redundant at times. So I think it's probably more of a testament to the lads around me giving me good service and being able to get on the end of things, because, you know, that's ultimately the thing that's going to make me look good. So probably a testament to that. But like I said, not good enough at the other end of the pitch. And that starts from the front line, but certainly not good in keeping goals out. And that's been really been our Achilles heel all season.
You were talking earlier on when we spoke on the pod this season, Matt, and it was really, really eye-opening. It was really kind of inspirational, really, given what you've done. So New Mills, Redditch United, Littleton, Droylsden, Redditch United again, Solihull Moors, Oldham, Macclesfield Town, Leeds, Fulham, Bristol City, QPR, Millwall, Salford. That's a hell of a lot of clubs. You've squeezed a hell of a lot of football into a slightly different way of getting into the professional game. But I also think, as you'd said earlier on in the season, that's set you up for whatever comes next. And what is next? Is it another football club next? Is it away from having your boots on the pitch? Are you in a nice position now where you can just take a minute, take a breath, look at what's gone and choose for you on your own terms what comes next?
That's the latter, perhaps, is exactly that. You know, it's the first time in my career that I've been out of contract. You know, touch wood, you know, fortunate to go through so many years where I've either had a move or I've had something lined up, and I've never had that awful weight that a lot of players have in the summer to think what is next. But I probably am a bit more of a privileged position than a lot of players, in the sense that, you know, I've had a good season and I've got other things in the background. So I'm kind of, like you say, just taking a bit of stock right now and going to make the right decision for me personally, whatever that may be. So I'm just taking a little breather now. I've got another son due in 4 weeks' time. So I'm going to have, you know, two young boys. I have my hands full in that respect. So just, like I said, just taking a bit of breather, a bit of time. And going to choose wisely what my next step is. And, you know, if that's in football, out of football, you know, that remains to be seen. But exactly what you alluded to before there, perhaps very privileged and very grateful for all of the clubs and experiences that I've had from 18 years old via university through to now.
It's interesting you use that word redundant when you were talking about if you don't get the supply, you'll be redundant on the pitch. But it's like as if you haven't been made redundant, have you? You've never had that, because the decision that you're going to make and the choices that you're going to decide upon are all by yourself. It's not as if it's being forced upon you or taken away from you.
No, exactly right, Jules. And, you know, that will also be my decision. You know, I've been lucky in the past to work with some great managers at some great clubs, whether that's as a plan A or a plan B. You know, I played a lot as a plan B throughout my career. You know, I can be a little bit Marmite in terms of, you know, I think as we get more and more modern day, I think managers prefer a striker that has a bit more of a skill set than maybe I have. You know,
just scoring over 20
goals. Score goals.
Yeah. Sorry, Gaff, you want more than gold? Are you joking?
You're the third highest goal scorer across all four divisions. You score goals.
Yeah. Unfortunately, for me, sometimes in some games, they do want more. You know, I think certainly off the ball, there's a lot of emphasis in pressing from the front. Mm. You know, there's a lot of emphasis in being able to run the channel as well as be a bit of a physical presence. You know, that kind of all-rounder number nine. You know, if we could all be Erling Haaland and have that incredible pace, ability to hold the ball up, physical presence, you know, managers want a few more strings to the bow, which is kind of, like I said, probably hindered me at under certain management at certain clubs. But I understand it. I understand it. You know, I'm probably at the, you know, somewhat immobile, but like you say, offer an effectiveness in the box, in both boxes. Defensively, I like to think I chip in with my fair share of, you know, clearances and particularly from set pieces. So, it's kind of worked for me and against me as the years have gone by.
It's so funny. I was chatting to Paul Cook about this the other day because he was on, as he obviously done so wonderfully well with Chesterfield. And he said he was sat with his dad after a game and he wasn't playing a certain player. Because he was talking about what he wasn't doing, but his old man kind of gave him a bit of a telling off. I said, you know, he scores lots of goals, don't you? And he was, yeah, actually, good point, Dad. Yeah.
Do you know what? It's funny you say that. That was one of the best bits of advice I ever got from Curtis Fleming, who was my coach at QPR. And he was always the one that said, focus on what you're good at, because a lot of people will be so quick to tell you what you're poor at or what you can't do.
Correct.
But what you can do, just focus on that and you're gonna be fine. And, you know, he was a great coach for me. I loved working with Kurt. But no, that was that one bit of advice that always stuck with me. And I always thought, you know, you've got a couple of things that you really excel at and that you're really good at. Make sure you get the most out of that and you'll be okay. And that's what I've done this season. You know, if you look at all my goals, you know, they're quite trademark. Mm. Back post headers or, you know, getting on the front foot in the box and getting on the end of things. And that's ultimately what's given me the success this season.
But that isn't just down to football, though, because you can apply that to anything. That's just that is sound as simple as it is, but that's life advice too, isn't it? Just concentrate on what you can do.
Absolutely. You know, I think especially in this day and age, you know, with social media and, you know, opinions are so at the forefront.
Everyone's an expert, Matt. You know that, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So I think everyone will be quick to point out that you can't do this and can't do that. And that was always particularly my advice to young players that I play with, you know, young lads coming through at Salford or whether it's at Millwall before, is, you know, he'd be so quick to tell you that you can't do this or that. But, you know, you're going to have an outstanding attribute of some form and just make sure you concentrate on that and maximise that to the best of your capability.
I get a sense that would be something that you'd be more than capable and more than happy to do, passing on wisdom, passing on experience. 34 now, so many games under your belt, so many years under your belt. I get the sense, knowing you like I do, that you'd take a great pride in being able to guide younger players in certain ways.
For sure. It's probably when I got to QPR, you know, I was in the back end of my 20s that I probably felt a bit of a bit more of an experienced pro. And, you know, I think you do naturally, I'm sure you're the same, perhaps at the tail end of your career, as you feel like you are able to give them more advice. And it's, you know, when I look at young players that I played with, the likes of Abiri Eze or Elias Chair, or, you know, young lads coming through, and I thought, you've got real exceptional talent here. I can't wait to see what you can do. And you do pass off bits of wisdom, and then you see them kick on and do so well. And I think, yeah, like, you know, you had some sort of, you know, you would have helped at some point in the way. But I think that's your job as an experienced pro, is to galvanise the dressing room and make sure everyone's steering in the right direction, and particularly the young pros, make sure that they, you know, they don't get too ahead of themselves and they've got the right mindset and everything like that.
Is there something you've always wanted to do? I know you're looking at opportunities and making choices, but is there something that you've always wanted to do that you could maybe try?
I kind of knew early on that management coaching wasn't for me. I never thought that would be my sort of path post football. So I've kind of just been exploring things away from the pitch and seeing what enjoyment I've got from that. So yeah, like I said, I kind of found myself quietly getting involved in the world of tech, which is something totally foreign and alien to a lot of sports people, but it's something that I've enjoyed doing, kind of bore out of curiosity and interest at the start. And I found myself launching a company with three friends in the past year, 18 months. I've really enjoyed that process. I think it's like anything, you want something that just gives you a sense of purpose. I think the big thing where players get unstuck is they don't know what that thing is that gives them the sense of purpose, that gives them the enjoyment, that gives them that get up and go in the morning. Mm. And for me, I wanted to find that. I feel like I found that with my business away from the game. But it's still heavily involved in the game. We manage athletes. We have over 100 athletes on our books at the minute. So I've kind of, you get scratch that itch by being involved in the world of sports still. So I've really enjoyed that. But at the same time, obviously, I still have that fire in my belly to play football. Like, it's the best job in the world. I've loved every minute of this, you know, my Salford time for the past 2.5 years, you know, regardless of how well or poorly it's gone at times. You know, it's undisputedly the best job in the world. So you just enjoy it for what it is.
I think it really reflected it in your open letter. It really, as I said, articulately put, nicely put, and just said with real feeling, Matt, which is, it's you in a nutshell, mate. That's exactly how you come across. I'm getting serious kind of Matthew Flamini vibes here, where he disappears and suddenly you go, hang on, he's a multi-billionaire from sports Twitter. Do you want to go into management? Absolutely not. No, this is my open letter.
Yeah, no, it's, I think like anything, you kind of quickly understand, well, I quickly understood what I think would be for me and not for me. And listen, maybe I'm wrong, maybe my career or post-football would be something different. But I think certainly navigating those first few years is tricky for anyone. You know, you read horror stories of what happens to players, but, you know, perhaps for you to see you excelling in presenting and on the TV and all sort, you
that's
know,
very nice.
But it's so obvious that you have a real passion for it because that comes out in your work. Do you know what I mean? And I hope for me that will be the case, that it's obvious and you feel, you know, you're just so enthusiastic to do that, like I have done with football for 14, 15 years.
But then you look at it, I suppose, and you could say, well, that has been your career and you've not known anything different. And the sacrifices that you've made and Prutz has obviously made as well to be the best you can be in the sport that you compete in. And now when you take that step back, maybe that, you know, that other stuff within you has a chance to blossom, and to shine too in whatever interest that would be.
Yeah, exactly. I tried my best over the past sort of, I think, and again, it's what I say to a lot of players coming into their 30s now, because once you do get into your 30s, it's a bit of a battle, you know, getting contracts longer than a year.
It's true. Once you're at 30, you're an old man, Jules. It's ridiculous.
Every year's a cherished year. Mm. You know, that's what they say when you get into your 30s, regardless of how well you do. You know, for me at 35, who's just scored 25 goals, you'd be surprised. So it's one of those where I always encourage players to spin their plates early. And you see what the PFA are doing now with a number of courses. They're trying to, you hear more and more players doing it now, try and get a bit of education behind them, because you want to have something in place when you finish. That's the key, because otherwise you probably will, unfortunately, be a statistic, which is not a great one. So I always try and encourage players to really focus on the latter end of their career, focus on what might give them that passion and that drive in the next chapter, whether that's in football, out of football, but be proactive, because you don't want to get to that day and be like, right, what's now, what's next? You want to have your plan in place. So I think it's good that I'm seeing more and more players being proactive. You know, we've got a lot of lads at Salford who are on a course of some kind or really looking into the next thing. And like you said, Jules, being able to show that passion in the next chapter, because the one thing that people say is you're a long time retired, stay in the game as long as you can. But if you flip that on its head, you are a long time retired. So you want something in that long time of retirement to be passionate about. So that's always my advice again for the young players. Spin plates.
Spin plates early on. I like that. I mean, Matt, I could try and say something flippant. I could try and say something heartfelt. But I think you've just absolutely nailed it there, mate. It's always a pleasure chatting. Obviously, the 72 in 72 is now the peak of your career and forever will be. That certificate will be there for all to see at Chateau Smith. So excited to see what the next chapter is, mate. I know you've got a little one on a tractor in the background, bless him. yeah, keeping him out in the fresh air. Another one on the way. Wish you the best with both of those. More than welcome to come and chat to us whenever you want, mate. But thank you so much for your time. Myself and Jules have really enjoyed the time with Jules.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, Matt. Enjoy your summer.
Will do. Cheers, guys.
Take care.
King of the 72 in 72 there, Matt Smith. Well deserved. What a thoroughly nice chat. I think it's safe to say, Jules, as well, so far we've covered all the bases, haven't we? From Josh Windass all the way to Matt Smith and everybody in between. They're wonderful players, goal scorers. I mean, Matt's peaking at that particular time. Intrigued to see where he ends up. And of course, Josh sounding delighted with the upcoming nuptials.
Let's just get back to... Up. Everything just, will be fine.
Just turn up. That's a motto for life. Just turn up. And see
just
what
turn
happens.
Up with your lady friend.
Yes, I know.
I'm not going to let you forget.
You're not
going to
let them. Good. I will obviously respect you more for continually bringing that up, and you know that, don't you? Anyway, let's talk some more football. Final day. You alluded to it right at the very top. I was at Ipswich in some glorious Suffolk sunshine, and it all went swimmingly for Tractor Boys, for Leeds. There were dark clouds, both literally and metaphorically, and didn't quite go according to plan for them. So it's the playoffs for Leeds and Southampton, of course. What was your take on that game and the two teams involved?
With Leeds, the fans were there. Mm-hmm. I think they'd had time, that dust had settled. They'd accepted perhaps what the outcome was going to be because they were very much relying on Huddersfield beating Ipswich, which you were at Portman Road, and mm-hmm. there was very little chance of that happening. And it looked amazing, can I say, in the sunshine and in the gloom of the grey clouds at Elland Road. I think once that second goal had gone in, it did go flat, and it's a case of how you bounce back from that now. Southampton, I remember Russell Martin telling me before the match he was going to try something different. He was going to switch things around. They'd had a good week training, and he did that. Tactically, he did that. It worked. It caught Leeds United out. And I think with Leeds United, they don't concede goals, but three against Middlesbrough, four against Queen's Park Rangers, two against Southampton. That was very unlike Leeds that we'd seen. And it's that chance, you know, that you had, but you've fallen away mm-hmm. slightly and you end up losing the game as well, which is losing a game at Elland Road also doesn't happen. So players are absent. They're trying to get players back for the playoffs. It's how they respond and, mm-hmm. and mentally how they respond going into it. And for Southampton, that was a good win for them. Mm-hmm. And when you look at West Brom, Norwich and Southampton, West Brom, by the way, finishing fifth. It's there. Never been taken away from them this season.
It did make me think of you when I saw that.
Forever fifth. They all knew that where they were going to be. Mm. And that's something maybe that they could take as a positive into it, whereas Leeds were always hoping for that automatic promotion and it didn't happen.
We mentioned West Brom, so of course it was Leeds third, Southampton fourth, West Brom fifth, they beat Preston on the final day, Norwich City in sixth, which means that Hull City finished the season seventh, 3 points off the playoffs, and now, as we know, and rather surprisingly, looking for a new manager, Liam Rossignol, coming away. I think we were all very... It's a hard thing to say you're shocked in football because you'll know this, Jules, working in the game for such a long period of time. You were both shocked and not shocked. You're not shocked because it's football, but you are shocked because of a broadly good job done by Liam and his side. What's your take on the fact that the owner said, thanks, but see you later?
You say a broadly good job. He did a brilliant job. Mm. When you consider where Hull were when he came in... And then they built on that and they missed out on the final day. And we said in the pod that Plymouth Hull, I felt, was the most intriguing game in the last round of fixtures in the Championship. Plymouth get the result that keeps them in the Championship. And obviously they've got a plan there of trying to get to the Premier League. And they can build on that now when they get a new manager in place. So You say well done to them, but with Hull it was like, well, I'm sure I heard the owner at the start of the season suggesting a minimum 10th place finish, so finishing the top 10. That would be the minimum aim that they wanted there, and just to miss out and finish seventh and not sixth in the playoffs. So whether the goalposts moved in January, Hull were on a terrific run of form, then they had that dip. Maybe that had a part to play in it as well. But I just think he's one of the brightest young coaches in the English game. And he's been nominated for Championship Manager of the Year Award as well. Mm. It doesn't go unnoticed. He's articulate. He gives energy. Hull had an identity that goes with it. So you look at the statement then that followed, and it was the talk about visions not being aligned. Mm. So you would suggest, you know, the detail
very
is
vague,
in that very vague, but there's a lot of detail in that if you look at it, analyze it, and think, well, something has gone on clearly and something isn't being agreed upon going forward. Liam Rossini will be fine. He will be snapped up because he's so good. He's young and he has a lot of experience with him. And all teams have a dip in form. But you just wonder if the goalposts moved and the owner is very ambitious. He wants promotion.
You mentioned potentially the MO at the start of the season. Kieran Maguire tweeted out yesterday, Hull City, 16th highest wage bill in the Championship, 17th most expensive squad, 19th highest revenue. So is there a case to say, and I mean this slightly tongue-in-cheek, that Ipswich Town have ruined it for everybody by doing what they've done?
Maybe people do look at Ipswich Town. Maybe people do, and maybe that puts pressure now on other teams in the Championship. Josh mentioned that as well. When we were speaking to him just a few moments ago, everyone is now looking at Ipswich and thinking, well, we want to be the next Ipswich. But to be the next Ipswich, you need to build a team, develop a team, have identity, have ambition, and have time. And you just feel that to go from where Liam Rossini came into and took that team to then progress and improve that team and to miss out on the final day, but whether it all changed at the start of the year when things were looking so positive. But Hull City will know what they're doing. The owner will know what he's doing. The owner will know what he wants. And maybe there was a difference of opinion and it's been building for quite some time and part ways, and Liam Rossini will go again and so will Hull City.
I think as well, I suppose if you're in the position, which, I mean, it'd be ace if we knew what this felt like, Jules, but it would take quite a leap of putting in £500,000 a week into a football club and it being over the course of a season to the tune of about £24 million. I mean, it would be nice to know and understand what that type of money felt like, but I suppose if you are going to be kind of black and white about it, if you own the football club, you're investing that, you can make whatever decision you want, really, can't you? And if it's you choose that a manager didn't get you where you wanted to go in a season, you do go again. And I think we'll be keeping our eyes firmly peeled on that. But there is potentially, is there a warning shot with regards to how we find the bottom three when you change managers and think that potentially you should be going in a different direction? Rotherham, of course, they'll be in League One. Huddersfield Town, Andre Brighton writer. I mean, talk about scorched earth. He didn't leave any stone unturned in his post-match assessment of what he saw, not just from his side against Ipswich, but from what he'd seen since he'd come into the
football. Since he came into the team. And then you're going to mention Birmingham City, aren't you?
So Birmingham City, they end up in the third tier for the first time since 1995, when managerial changes were made, when they were in the top six. The man that was moved on deemed surplus to requirements. In the end, John Eustace led Blackburn to safety. Also helps when you've got someone scoring 27 goals like Sammy Smodics. But is there a cautionary tale in there, given where Birmingham City find themselves going into next season?
I think it was always going to be difficult for Gary Rowett to try and keep Birmingham in the Championship. And obviously, the situation with Tony Mowbray, we hope to see him back next season.
Absolutely.
Wayne Rooney, that appointment clearly didn't work, but you've just alluded to their owners can do, and there was a new ownership. They can make the decisions and they decide the future and what they want to see and the vision of what they have for that club. I think, again, you can look at Ipswich and look what they did in League One and come through. And it's not the league that Birmingham fans probably would want to be in. They would have preferred to stay in the Championship, but we spoke on the pod, didn't we, last week about how the story has to change. The narrative has to change. Things have to change at Birmingham. They can't keep being in this position. And you could look at it and say, well, this is where you're going to be playing next season. There is an opportunity now to change. Look at Derby. Look at the teams of also. I'm saying this, but then I think League One's really difficult to get out of. And I'm not laughing about that. It is. We say the Championship's a really hard league, but League One, look at Bolton, look at Barnsley, look at Ipswich, look at Derby. So it's not going to be easy, but there is a real opportunity to just wipe the slate clean. The finance is clearly there with the owners they have. And just not take the pressure off, but just breathe for a little bit. Just breathe and allow it to grow. And then Birmingham hopefully will be back in the Championship and beyond that maybe, if they can just get it right. And this is a real opportunity now to get it right. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it works. But it is a very complicated league to get out of, League One.
The hard reset. It's been a great Championship season, hasn't it? Have you enjoyed it?
I have. Ipswich, I think, has just been the story, the story of the EFL. And although they're not in the Championship, shout out to Doncaster Rovers as well. I think they've been a huge story of the EFL season with the position that they were in at the start of the year and to where they are now. I think there's been some brilliant stories, brilliant stories in the EFL. And it hasn't always gone to plan, which is what Championship EFL football is all about. It never goes to plan.
Exactly. Never. And we welcome back Chesterfield.
You can never predict it.
You can welcome back Chesterfield. And for the first time, we say hello to Bromley. So Bromley. There you go. Newbies. Always nice to see newbies, isn't it?
It is. And Bromley obviously going up in the manner which they did as well in a playoff final. It's just fresh. And it would be exciting to see what they bring.
Fresh and exciting, like you, Juliet Farrington. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Maybe not on a Wednesday morning, but yes. Fresh and exciting. Your lady friend.
Right, I'm off. How utterly glorious. Three extremely good guests, all wonderfully unique. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please give us a follow in all the usual places or watch us on YouTube. I promise it's well worth it. My name's David Prutton, and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.